And it's about 10 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, the 22nd of December, 2015. This afternoon, we are going to be talking to Jeremy Baker, who is the new Fair Housing Enforcement Project Director for the Alaska Legal Services Corporation, and to a familiar voice, Lena Simmons, host of A Little Bit of Broadway, who's going to be here to talk about the Midwinter Vocal Festival. And we're also going to hear about the Resurrection Lutheran Church Celebration Ringers Handbell Choir with a Keep the 12 Days of Christmas Going fundraising concert to benefit Daniel's Well, a project to provide a water system in Kithiani, Kenya. That in addition to, of course, Bird Note, Writer's Almanac, and everything else you love here on a Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned, and we'll be back after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. It's time for the United States to own up to its troubling past and the lingering consequences of oppressing Native Americans. That's the conclusion of a report released Monday by the Lakota People's Law Project. The activist group urges the U.S. to form a Truth and Reconciliation Commission patterned after Canada's effort. Canada's commission formed only as part of a settlement in a class action lawsuit. That body released its findings last week. Lakota People's Law Project attorney Chase Iron Eyes says the government should no longer hide from the difficult truth of what the U.S. did during the Indian boarding school era.
We want a truth-telling and an opportunity for our people who are still alive, survivors of boarding schools, to be acknowledged and so that they can heal from some of these things.
Iron Eyes says the process should focus on the victims of forced schooling, but should also include the high number of ongoing foster placements of Native American children with non-Native families. He says the U.S. needs to act now in order to help directly heal the wounds of people who were taken from their families, an injustice that hits home with him and many others.
That time has already run out on people like my grandmother, her peers, but there is still time for people like my mother and all of the peers of her generation who were involuntarily taken as late as the 1950s.
Iron Eyes says he senses relief from Canada's First Nations people over that country's acknowledgement of past atrocities. He says he hopes the U.S. is brave enough to mount a similar effort. Two teams took home 2015 championship titles at South Dakota's Lakota Nation Invitational Boys and Girls Basketball Tournament. Reporter China Lockett has more on the event.
Loud fans filled the bleachers of Rapid City's Rushmore Plaza Civic Center for the final games of the Lakota National Invitational, or LNI. They cheered as the girls' basketball team, Mustangs, from Little Wound School in Kyle, South Dakota, faced off against the Todd County Falcons girls' team on Saturday night. The Mustangs took the win with a score of 62-50. Lyle LeBeau Jr. is coach of the girls' champion team.
It's big. Everyone's big for us. It's just another step in our way to state. But coming up here, getting invited here and winning in our first year is really big for us. Everybody's seen up here that we can play, and we won our state title last year, so we're looking to defend, and we've got the weapons to do it.
The boys' team, White River Tigers, played against the Nebraska team, the Winnebago Indians, next. Winnebago stole the game with a final score of 74-40. Coach Jeffrey Barrage says this is the first time Winnebago has been invited to LNI.
They did it. Last year was a struggle for us. You know, I don't think we even broke 500 last year. So that's a big, big challenge for us, building confidence last year. And it carried over this year, and these girls want to win. So, and they showed it this weekend.
Barrage says the team has been invited back to LNI next year, and they plan to try and repeat the success of this year. For National Native News, I'm China Lockett in Rapid City, South Dakota.
It was the 39th year for the tournament in Rapid City. The tiny town of Lemon, South Dakota, is rolling out the red carpet for a premiere of the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, The Revenant, on January 6th. The movie is based on the true survival and revenge story of fur trapper Hugh Glass in the 1820s. The film features Forrest Goodluck and a number of other Native American actors depicting the interactions with tribes of the area. Salish Kootenai College in Pablo, Montana, is closed today to honor the memory of their president, who died early Monday. Robert DePoe III died after an extended illness. He took the helm of the tribal college in 2013. He was 40 years old. The college of about 1,000 students serves the Flathead Indian Reservation. For National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kawanak's news programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is about 6 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here on Juneau Afternoon, this Tuesday, the 22nd of December. And we are going to start this afternoon show off talking to Jeremy Baker. Jeremy, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It is our pleasure to do so. And you are relatively new to your position as the Fair Housing Enforcement Project Director for the Alaska Legal Services Corporation. Is that correct?
That's right. I started last January, actually. It's a fairly new program. We just launched it this year with a grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which is allowing us to really focus on both raising awareness of people's rights and responsibilities under fair housing laws, as well as assisting people who might have been victims of housing discrimination with enforcement action to stand up for their rights.
All right. So, of course, Alaska Legal Services Corporation is a statewide organization. The largest office is in Anchorage, but we do have an office here in Juneau out in the Jordan Creek Center. And so listeners who are interested about what this might mean to them should realize that legal services certainly does help folks in Southeast, generally, and in Juneau specifically.
Absolutely, that's correct. Folks can contact our local office there in Juneau, and our Fair Housing Project also has a toll-free hotline that is connected directly to our attorneys here in Anchorage that specialize in fair housing. So you can reach us either way for assistance with your situation or for advice.
Now, in your capacity as the Fair Housing Enforcement Project Director, will you be directly representing clients or doing outreach to landlords to help them not make mistakes in the way they administer their projects, or both? Or what will your job actually, or I guess I shouldn't say what will it involve, what has it involved since you started this past January?
Well, yes, definitely a little of both. We do have a couple of other attorneys that are focusing full-time on fair housing issues, so they do most of the client representation, often in conjunction with attorneys from our local offices. So, for example, if someone had a fair housing issue there in Juneau, they might be working with an attorney from our Juneau office who might also consult with our fair housing specialist here in Anchorage. And you're also right that another big piece of what we're doing is education and outreach across the entire community, trying to reach, you know, tenants and homeowners and prospective home buyers, as well as landlords, social service providers, advocates, and even other attorneys that might be working with people on fair housing or housing-related issues.
Well, it sounds like there's a really wide array of services, which, of course, is descriptive of legal services, which tries to do almost anything it can within the parameters of the federal law that restricts some of the funding, what the funding can go for. What do you find in this past year are some of the biggest problems facing Alaskan tenants and perhaps even Alaskan landlords? Maybe for the landlords, it's ignorance of provisions of federal or state law, and for tenants, it's not being aware of what they can or can't do without getting in trouble with their landlords.
I think that that's exactly right. You know, the Fair Housing Initiatives program, which we're funded under, is something that's been going on for decades nationally, but no organization in Alaska has had the grant to really focus on this work. So, as I mentioned before, there is a real lack of awareness, I think, on both sides, and that's reflected in the fact that in recent years HUD has received in the low single digits in terms of the number of complaints per year related to housing discrimination in Alaska, whereas they're handling, 8,000 or 9,000 nationally. And I think it's fair to say that that's not because discrimination isn't happening in Alaska. It's that folks aren't necessarily aware of what their rights are and what their enforcement options are when they are experiencing illegal housing discrimination.
And as far as illegal housing discrimination, are those prohibited or protected classes, I should say, are those defined federally as well as at the state level, or is that just a federal list of criteria that you cannot use to decide whether or not to rent to someone?
Both. In addition to the Federal Fair Housing Act, there's also the Alaska State Human Rights Law. So under the Federal Fair Housing Act, there are seven protected classes, and those are race, color, national origin, religion, sex, family status, which is the presence of minor children in the home, as well as disability, which is defined very expansively to include physical and mental disabilities that impact your day-to-day life.
So a pretty exhaustive list of things that are not to be considered when someone is deciding whether or not to rent to a prospective tenant.
That's right. And under the state law, marital status and changes in marital status are also protected.
All right. So it wouldn't be all right to discriminate for someone who was living in a marital relationship, but they weren't actually married.
That's right.
And do you find that you're able to resolve most of the problems without recourse to the courts, or is there a fair amount of actual litigation that has gone on as a result of some of these cases that you've taken on?
Well, I think we do resolve probably the majority of the cases without having to take, formal legal action. It's often a matter of just working with the landlord to make a formal request for the tenant. Well, let me back up a bit. You know, the most common issue that we find is for making reasonable accommodations, which are changes in a housing provider's rules or policies, based on someone's disability so that they can have an equal opportunity to access the housing. So in those cases, it's often just a matter of making a formal request to the landlord and educating them about what the law requires, and generally then they're willing to provide the accommodation as required under the law. If we're dealing with a different type of discrimination or a landlord that is refusing to take the required action under the Fair Housing Law, then we have a few different options, which can include filing an administrative complaint with HUD, which they will then investigate and could lead to a hearing. Or alternatively, we could file an administrative complaint with the State Human Rights Commission. And finally, litigation is also an option where warranted.
Well, that's good to know that, of course, you know, legal services should have all legal possible tools in the kit at its fingertips as it seeks to help people out. I mentioned a little while ago the proactive side. Is there any formal outreach to landlords so that, you know, if someone buys a duplex and they've never been a landlord before and they're going to be renting half of it out, is there any place that they could go personally on the website and learn the do's and don'ts? Or are there, probably in Juneau isn't a big enough place, but in Anchorage I would think there might be enough of a critical mass of population to do a, you know, Landlord 101 seminar.
You know, actually, I came down to Juneau just a couple of weeks ago and did a couple of presentations that were open to the public, and certainly landlords were encouraged to attend. However, it wasn't specifically targeted at landlords. That's something that we want to do more of in the coming year, and we'll definitely be doing that across the state. You mentioned our website, which is fairhousingalaska.org, and there are a lot of resources on our website that would be helpful to a new landlord or even, of course, a current landlord in helping them understand what their obligations and responsibilities are under fair housing laws. And I should add that, we are here as a resource, again, for the entire community, not just for people who feel like they've experienced discrimination. So we can provide information and answer questions via our hotline or email to landlords or really anyone else who needs more information about fair housing laws.
Well, that's great. So it's fairhousingalaska.org. And then say the toll-free number again for listeners.
Yes, it's 855-679-FAIR, which is 3247. 855-679-3247.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I actually have one more question, and I don't know if you'll know the answer off the top of your head. I know in the employment discrimination law world, the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has taken some steps to try to combat discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity under sex as being an existing protected class. Is there any movement towards extending protections towards people who might feel they've been discriminated on that basis in the housing world?
Well, there have been some steps. First of all, in public housing, housing that's funded directly by the federal government, they have issued some regulations around discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity that is going to prohibit federally funded housing providers from discriminating on that basis. In addition, here in Anchorage, our assembly has taken action to make sexual orientation and gender identity protected classes under our local fair housing law. So in Anchorage now, those are protected classes as well. So we are seeing, you know, some movement in this area, and certainly looking forward to the day when sexual orientation and gender identity become protected classes under the federal law. You mentioned sex, and there are some, you know, the way that it typically comes in under the current fair housing legal regime is nonconformity with gender stereotypes has been deemed to be a form of sex discrimination under the fair housing laws, but you know, certainly not as expansive as the protection should be, in my opinion.
Right. Well, you know, so progress takes time, but I wanted to ask that because I'm aware of some of the movement, some proactivity, I would say, on the federal employment law side, and I just was interested. So thank you so much for being able to answer that question so aptly. Well, it's exciting to know that Alaska now has a fair housing enforcement project being run under the auspices of Alaska Legal Services Corporation, and this is funded through a federal grant. How long will that grant run through?
We secured funding for 2016 at this point, so we've got funding through the end of next year, and of course we'll be applying next year for further grant funding, and we're hoping to get a 3-year grant at that time.
Excellent. Well, Jeremy Baker, the Fair Housing Enforcement Project Director for Alaska Legal Services Corporation, is there anything else at all you'd like to share with our listeners this Juneau afternoon?
I would just add that, you know, Alaska Legal Services is generally restricted to helping folks that are low income or low asset, and under this grant from HUD, our work is not restricted based on the income or assets of the applicants. So I would again encourage anyone with that feels like they've been a victim of discrimination, or that just has questions or would like more information about fair housing laws, to don't hesitate to get in touch with us.
All right. Well, Jeremy Baker, one more time, say your telephone number and your website.
Yes, it's fairhousingalaska.org, and the number is 855-679-3247.
Thank you very much, Jeremy Baker, and I want to wish you some very happy holidays, and keep up the good work there at Alaska Legal Services Corporation.
All right, thanks again for having me on, and happy holidays to you as well, Ben.
Okay, bye now. Thank you. It is 22, almost 23 minutes after the hour. This is Ben Brown on a Juno afternoon, Tuesday, the 22nd of December. And my guests now are Byron McGilvray and Lena Simmons, and they're here to talk about a very exciting event, the Midwinter Vocal Festival. So welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And I say, no further ado, let's launch right into it. What is the Midwinter Vocal Festival, and how can people get involved?
Okay, 27 years ago, we asked Byron to come up and teach us a little bit about choral techniques. And he must have liked us, so he's come up now for 27 years. And so we have this week-long workshop. We'll start on Sunday and we'll end on Sunday. And with three classes. One is a basic voice group class, which if you're a shower singer or, you know, you sort of sing along maybe in church, kind of, sort of, or you haven't sung since grade school choir, or you have no idea what even voice part you are, you can come and get some real basic grounding techniques on how to sing without blowing out your voice or making yourself tired or hurting yourself.
Or hurting anyone else.
Or hurting anyone else, that's true. Then we do a little class called Ensembles, in which you learn how to sing in groups of 2 to 6 people, where you're the only person on your part.
With other people,
yeah,
with independently.
Other people.
Okay.
Yeah. And which is an entirely different kind of skill.
Right.
You know? And can be a little frightening, maybe, but, you know, it's you're in safe hands, okay? And then there's the big one, which is festival chorus, which is everybody who wants to sing, you come out, you sit down, we give you the music, we work on it for a week, and then we perform it at the end of the week.
And that's going to be the performance that takes place
on the 3rd of January.
All right, on the 3rd of January.
Yeah, so we'll start this Sunday on the 27th, and we will take New Year's Eve off, okay? But then we'll pick it right back up on New Year's Day, because football's over with by the time rehearsal would start.
Right, and so rehearsal's not too early in the morning on New Year's
Day. No. And then we'll perform everything we've been working on that following Sunday afternoon.
How very exciting. In 27 years, this has been going on.
27.
Yes.
And Byron, you must like it. You must like coming back to Juno if you've done it for 27 years.
I probably have more close friends here than I do where I live permanently, you know.
And where's that?
In Athens, Texas.
Oh, all right. All the way from Athens, Texas.
Yeah. But it's a special situation here because for a town of 32,000 people, the amount of art that takes place musically, graphic arts, visual arts, all those things is really quite amazing. And so this city really supports those kinds of endeavors.
And it's not just professional, but it's amateur, community, individual. I mean, all levels of artistic activity are really promoted here in Juneau.
But in fact, that is the most exciting because, the term amateur means that you do it because you love doing it. And I think that the people here have embraced that totally.
Mm-hmm. And all professionals probably were amateurs at one point.
I would hope so.
Stay amateurs now.
Well, exactly. If you still don't have that love for it, I mean, so it's a sliding scale of what professional means. And I guess the point we're all trying to make is that bright line between performer and audience isn't such a bright line here in Juneau. It's
right.
Crossed by all
mm-hmm.
sorts of people mm-hmm. all the time.
And a lot of our audience are people who have at one time or another done something with us.
Mm-hmm. So 27 years into it, how is enrollment going for this year? Is it all full up? Are there still spots?
No, there's still spots. There's in festival chorus, there's always spots in festival chorus.
It will never be full.
We've been anywhere. Our first year we had 23 people. We've had as many as 99. We'll take 150 if 150 people would come out. I don't know where we'd put us, but we'll do everybody. Group voice is a little smaller because if you're listening to individual voices, then you need to have a smaller class. But anybody who wants to sing, if you don't think you know how to sing, if you're not sure what you sing, if you haven't sung in a long time, or if, you're Met opera trained, we got a place for you.
Very good. And so how many people are signed up for this year?
I don't know. I didn't look before I came.
All right. But, there's enough that you're not concerned about not having enough.
Oh, I will never be concerned about not having enough. We will dance with them that brung us.
All right.
But we got great music picked out for this year. And
my next question, what's on the roster, especially for the festival chorus this year?
Well, the festival chorus is going to do the Sanctus from the Fauré Requiem, which is, I think, one of those pieces that whenever you mention the Fauré Requiem, singers go, yes, And then, just because I wanted to do it, we're doing Blessed is the Man from Mendelssohn's Elijah, which is just a wonderful oratorio, and it's a great classical piece of music. And then our other classical piece of music is called De Profundis by, and I'm drawing a blank, but it was written for in 2012 for the Kennedy Center.
Okay, so it's a new piece.
It's a new piece. It's a very new piece, very rhythmic, and just, it's really fun. Then the fun stuff is, as some people would say, we've got a vocal choral arrangement of a Ashokan farewell from the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a version of the James Bond theme, you know, bomb, 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 bomb. There is Transylvania Mania from Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein. Got to have a Broadway piece. And that was crazy. And then...
That's better than putting on the Ritz from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's just...
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's a politically incorrect song, but Mel Brooks get away with it.
Yes,
so.
Yes. And then finally there is this wonderful piece set to Rossini that is a joyous praise of Hot Peppers. You know, so it's cute. It's really fun.
And did you both curate these selections together?
Yes, we did.
Well, they're obviously, they come from... From minds that have many years of experience picking things.
And one of the...
The ensemble piece.
The ensemble pieces we're doing...
It's called Beethoven's Wig. Beethoven's wig is very big. Beethoven's wig. You know, so it's fun, you know.
Nonsensical, but it lets you really... It's just fun, and no, it's consequence-free. It's a really good way to stretch your wings and learn.
Yeah, well, the whole idea of Midwinter is that you sing a variety of styles of music that you may not get a possibility to sing, you know, in here in Juneau, in other settings. And so we tried to do a classical piece, and we tried to do a sacred piece, and we tried to do a Broadway piece, and we tried to do a jazzy piece, so that there's something everybody's going to love and probably something everybody's going to hate, but, you know, it all balances out.
And the performance is going to be on the 3rd of January.
At 3 o'clock.
At Thunder Mountain High School.
Right.
And so if you did have 150 people on the stage, you'd be creative. But
We could be creative, you know. Not everybody would get a seated riser, but, you know, we could manage it.
Indeed. Now, of course, I think I just jumped right into this, assuming that people might know that this was a program of Juneau Lyric Opera.
I hope they know.
Well, but if they didn't,
this Juneau Lyric Opera.
Let's be explicit that it's a wonderful organization that's sponsoring the Midwinter Vocal
Festival. And we're celebrating our 40th anniversary this year.
Yes.
So, you know, we're doing lots more this year than we do in a normal year. But this is something we do all the time.
On July 29th, 2016, mm-hmm. the concert celebrating the 40th year is going to take place. And inviting people back who've sung before from in the operas, musicals, whatever, with the chorus. And so it's going to be a very, very, very exciting time on the 29th of July 2016.
And, you know, we love advance notice here, but this is probably setting some sort of record for at least this week on a Juneau afternoon.
What we do March then? March is Man of La Mancha.
Okay, and that's coming up, and that's going to be a wonderful hit.
It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Broadway show.
Yes.
You know, won 5 Tonys, was Best Musical, got to dream the impossible dream. Uh-huh. What more can you ask for?
Indeed.
Yeah, but now, this coming week, you know, you could get through Christmas, catch your breath, and then...
Sunday it begins.
Sunday begins. Sunday we'll be at Holy Trinity. We'll be in McPheeters Hall rehearsing. Monday night, the church has a function, so we're going to be at Resurrection Lutheran. And then we'll go back to Holy Trinity until that Saturday when we'll move into the high school.
All right. Yeah. And again, if people want to sign up, if they're not signed up.
JunoOpera.org.
Okay. And they can sign up actually at the website.
They can sign up on the website, or you can just show up at the door. And the website has all the information on which classes at what time and what day and all that other sort of stuff. But, you know, I can't imagine a life without singing. And if you don't sing... And you should take this class, shouldn't you, Ben? Shouldn't you, Ben?
Well, I am leaving town on the 30th and not coming back till the 9th. So.
Oh, excuses.
Yeah, so that's a better excuse than I've had before. But I am obviously a huge fan of Juneau Lyric Opera, and I enjoy the work that it does in terms of providing wonderful entertainment opportunities, but also involving members of the community to refine their singing abilities and learn the joy that is singing.
True. Very true.
So, Byron, anything special that you're thinking about this 27th year as you get ready to do the Midwinter Vocal Festival?
Well, the musical selection will be done by Lena and by...
You're talking this summer. He's talking this summer.
Oh, yeah. No,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. This summer, Kristen Miller and
are
working on this. And part of it will be, you know, it's going to be, you know, Michael Wittig sings, and we want Michael Wittig to sing Trouble from Music Man. And if Fran Almer will come back, and we're going to ask Fran Almer, then we want her to sing for My Land Thing. You know, we want people to reprise the things that they've done. And so we got to get David Miller to reprise Edna from Hairspray. You know,
That is probably something that good luck talking him into it. But he likes to sing. So
he
probably will
sing.
Be able to.
I think, I don't think
I
be in
don't
trouble.
Think that.
Since his wife's the producer, I think, you know,
David
life
is
will
a
go
fantastic
well.
Performer. I've had the opportunity to work with him when I was chorus master of Opera Fairbanks, and he's been up there, worked several times, and he's a professional. He knows what he's doing when he gets up there, and he gets it ready. So.
My spouse was the executioner in the production of Tosca.
Ah.
So I got to see Dr. Miller perform in that, and I've always been impressed by his ability to perform and to sing both.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He not only sings it, but he sells it.
Right.
He does. He's a good actor.
Excellent. Well, Lena, Byron, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners
come
this afternoon?
Sing, come
y'all come.
Sing.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And again, I apologize that I'm going to be out of town. I'll be with you in spirit, but I hope you have a very wonderful turnout. Best wishes for a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and very happy holidays.
Merry
thank
Christmas.
You.
Yes.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 22nd of December, 2015. The birthday of Giacomo Puccini, born in Lucca in Tuscany, Italy, 1858, who gave us great heroines of the opera, the seamstress Mimi of La Boheme, and the singer Flora of Tosca, the Japanese teenager Butterfly in Madame Butterfly, and the Chinese princess in Turandot. It's winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, the beginning of winter, shortest day, longest night of the year, the Earth tilting away from the sun now directly over the Tropic of Capricorn, running through Australia. Christina Rossetti wrote, "In the bleak midwinter, frosty winds made moan, earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone, snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow, in the bleak midwinter, long ago." It's the 59th birthday of Colo, the first gorilla born in captivity. She was born at the Columbus Zoo in Ohio. And at age 59, she is the oldest gorilla in captivity and perhaps even the oldest in the world. The primatologist Diane Fossey said, "The more you learn about the dignity of the gorilla, the more you want to avoid people." And it's the birthday of the poet Kenneth Rexroth, born South Bend, Indiana, 1922. He was an orphan at the age of 14, went to live in Chicago with his aunt, decided to hitchhike around the country, worked at odd jobs, traipsed through Europe, met Eliot and Pound there, learned several languages too, and was in San Francisco by 1927. He translated poetry from the Chinese and Japanese, started a poetry show on KPFA in San Francisco, was married four times, once to two women simultaneously. Here's a poem for today by Kenneth Rexroth entitled Snow. "Low clouds hang on the mountain, the forest is filled with fog. A short distance away, the giant trees recede and grow dim, 200 paces and they're invisible. All day the fog curdles and drifts. The cries of the birds are loud. They sound frightened and cold. Hour by hour it grows colder. Just before sunset the clouds drop down the mountainside. Long shreds and tatters of fog flow swiftly away between the trees. Now the valley below is filled with clouds, like clotted cream, and over them the sun sets yellow and the sky full of purple feathers. After dark, a wind rises and breaks branches from the trees and howls in the treetops, and then suddenly is still. Late at night, I wake and look out of the tent. The clouds are rushing across the sky, and through them is tumbling the thin, waning moon. Later, all is quiet, except for a faint whispering. I look out. Great flakes of wet snow are falling. Snowflakes are falling into the dark flames of the dying fire. In the morning, the pine boughs are sagging with snow, and the dogwood blossoms are frozen, and the tender young purple and citron oak leaves. A poem entitled Snow by Kenneth Rexroth, from the Complete Poems, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games. Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's about 39 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 22nd of December, and this is a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Sue Bolita. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon, Sue.
Thank you so much.
And you are here to talk about an upcoming event that's going to be helping some people over in Kenya.
Yeah, so it's sort of a two-pronged hello today. It's talking about a project that I've come here and spoken about before, Daniel's Well, which is a fundraising project that Resurrection Lutheran Church has undertaken to create not a well, because wells can be had for a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. but we're actually providing a water system for the town. So a borehole has been drilled, and we are helping them to supply the piping and the water storage tank and the labor and the surveying. So some of those attendant things to make an actual water system rather than just a pump well.
And the town is called Kithiani.
Kithiani, Kenya.
And how many people live there?
A number.
Okay. Well, as I was saying before we went on the air, I actually happened just to have been in Kenya and East Africa myself in a relatively small village. And I was actually asked how many people live there earlier today. And I said, you know, I'm going to say a couple of thousand. But you see the lay of the land and you're not really sure. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's variable according to the geography.
That's right. Some places are more densely inhabited than others.
Yes.
Now, Daniel's Well takes its name from your friend Daniel Kioku Mutunga.
Yes.
And how did you meet Daniel?
I met Daniel in seminary. We came together in a particular class that we were taking on the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. which we've always kind of smiled because it was not our own intention to bring us together. But since seminary, we have stayed in touch. We've stayed in communication. And his dream even then was to have water in his home village. He's currently an instructor at Daystar University in Nairobi. So his seminary education supported that instructional drive of his, but he never left his hometown roots in Kithiani.
Okay. And the place I was just visiting in Kenya was on the shores of Lake Victoria, and it rained, at least this time of year, it rains pretty frequently. So catchment provided a great deal of water for the town. Now, you know, you had to boil it, and people drank a lot of bottled water, too. I can tell you that was, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's no recycling,
right.
So that's got its own problems.
Right.
But I'm thinking over a little bit farther towards the coast, sort of in the middle of the country where Nairobi is, water supplies may be more erratic.
And the rains come very much more sporadically. They're seasonal, and then that's it.
And there's no lake you can even clean water up from.
There is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what an exciting project. And the total budget is $15,000?
$15,000. And when I first came, we were just starting on that project. We invited listeners to be a part of that. We felt like that was a big ask for any one unit to come up with $15,000. So we've been kind of continuing to poke the larger Juno community. We are currently With some matching, we're between $11,000 and $13,000. So we're that close.
And that brings us to this upcoming event.
Exactly.
All right. Tell us.
Well, part of it is that many people think that the 12 days of Christmas we are in the midst of counting down.
Au contraire.
Exactly. The 12 days of Christmas begin on Christmas Day. So one of the counters to that, oh, Christmas has come and now I feel let down and deflated, is on December 27th, which is the third day of Christmas. Well, the second day. Well, no, it's the third day of Christmas, actually. The Celebration Ringers, our bell choir at Resurrection Lutheran Church, will be having a fundraising concert. So December 27th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a free will offering concert with Celebration Ringers. We have solo ringers. We'll have the whole choir. We'll have additional musicians as well. So it should be a great way to continue to celebrate the Christmas season.
And that's going to be a Sunday afternoon.
It's a Sunday afternoon.
And there's no entry fee. Whatever people feel motivated to donate when they're there, they're able to donate.
Absolutely.
And this is all going to be gratefully accepted and go towards your goal of $15,000.
It will.
Will you have anything there? I mean, I don't know if you will, so I hope it's not a bad question. Any sort of photos of Kithiani or anything like that so people might see a little bit more about where the funds are going to be going?
We do. We have some very lovely pictures from when they were drilling the borehole. So we have community members who are there. We have the actual drilling that takes place. And to me, one of the most moving pictures is, or photos, is a group of the community with their hands around the borehole blessing that. So that will be there, yes, for people to be able to see what it is that we're working towards.
Have you been able to go over and visit Kithiani?
Not yet. Daniel continues to invite us. And, you know, that's hopefully somewhere within the larger plan to be able to go and either see the work in progress or to celebrate when the work is completed.
My father made the arrangements for our trip over to the village where he and my mom have a nonprofit corporation that does these health scholarships. And I have to say, usually I always want to make the travel plans because I think I'm savvier. He got us an amazing itinerary from here to Seattle, Seattle to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Nairobi on KLM. I mean, it took 2 days to get there, but
right.
None of the layovers were that painful, and it really was not that horribly prohibitively expensive.
Right.
So I encourage you to go.
Possibilities are there,
yep.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I think obviously none of the money you're raising is going to go towards that. That would be your standalone thing. But
right.
What a gift to yourself once you've been able to get all this great work done.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, for Daniel to have come here to see our context, into the United States, what a great reciprocal joy that would be to be able to go and see him in the midst of this project.
Well, I can tell you that was only my second time on the African continent. The first time was in South Africa, which was probably a lot better off 15 years ago than it is now. But we don't have time to talk about Jacob Zuma. But Kenya is a wonderful place full of wonderful people. Almost all of them speak English. There are some dangers there, but there's dangers anywhere in this world, including our own country. So I think people shouldn't be afraid of it, and I would encourage anyone who had the chance to go, including you, go when you can go, because it's a great place.
I will. But for people who are here in Juneau and they're looking for a place to go, they can come to Resurrection Lutheran Church for this concert on Sunday.
And feel a little bit of that Kenyan love and joy.
And feel that connection and be a part of it. And as I was saying to you as we were beginning to chat a little bit, so many times these fundraising kinds of things that we do, we hope that they get to the right people and that it makes a difference in people's lives. This is a very personal connection, and so we're able to talk to Daniel and know what exactly is happening in the project, and so it makes it much closer to home.
Yes, and we were talking about that before we went on the air. I mean, having that personal connection just gives you a much stronger sense of confidence that what you're doing is making a real difference and impact.
Absolutely.
And the expressions of thanks that you get from people over on the other end are another way to make sure that you really feel like you're doing the right thing. So
one of our favorite things, we had a connection with another person that Daniel had introduced us to, Mary Muki Mnugambi, who we supported through her college tuition, and she wrote us a letter saying she was so thrilled and so thankful, and if she could, she would buy our congregation a goat. And we knew that was a cherished gift.
Oh my goodness, and there are some adorable goats over there. No, I'm not kidding, Sue. I mean, I want to get a house so we can have goats in the yard now, because they're cute, 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 and they're also a wonderful part of the cycle of life over there. Well, Sue Bolita, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about the upcoming 12 Days of Christmas fundraising handbell concert at 3 p.m. on the 27th, or about this project in Kenya?
Just, I would say very particularly, a handbell choir is different. It's unique. And if you have not had a chance to experience what a handbell choir looks like and all the various techniques that we will be bringing forward, please come and just have a good time.
Very good. Sue Bolita, thank you very much. Or as I should say, as they say in Kenya, Asante Sana.
and thank you.
All right.
This is Bird Note. In North America, it's winter. Not a bad time to head for the subtropical realms of South Florida and listen in on some of the region's birds. Those are the sharp-edged phrases of a white-eyed vireo. This small, skulky songbird is a full-time resident of Florida and might sing at any time of the year. There lurks a more secretive bird in the Everglades and Florida Keys, the mangrove cuckoo. Rarely seen, it sings sporadically in winter, but when it does, you'll know it. A sweeter voice belongs to the spot-breasted oriole, found in suburban neighborhoods around southeast Florida. Spot-breasted orioles were first brought to Florida in the 1940s from Central America. Our final stop takes us to a wooded swamp, home to one of the continent's most peculiar birds, and with a voice to match. It's a wading bird called a limpkin, tall, brown, long-beaked. Its eerie cry is unmistakable. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
And it's about 49 minutes after the hour here on a Juno afternoon. And next up, we're going to talk to Eaglecrest. Eaglecrest, can you hear me?
I can.
Is this Jeffra?
It is, Jeffra.
Hi, Ben Brown here. How are you doing, Jeffra?
I'm doing great, Ben. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I'd be better if I was up on the mountain, but I did work all day, and this is my lunch hour, but that's okay because I was there this past weekend, and it was wonderful.
Well, I can tell you it was wonderful today. The skiing just doesn't get a whole lot better.
Well, my concern is this. The snow is almost too nice, and people are having almost too much fun. What can we do about that?
I think it's great. There's smiles around the entire mountain. We're teaching people how to ski and snowboard, and we've got the community up here enjoying our mountain, and it's been a fabulous day on the mountain, Ben.
Good deal. Now, what if people haven't gone up yet this year, what are some of the things, I mean, they should be prepared for the beautiful new Porcupine Lodge if they haven't seen that, right?
They should be, and if they need to get their season pass picture taken or need to purchase lift tickets or rentals, they do all of that in the Porcupine Lodge. So they come onto into the main floor. Outside ticket windows are for lift tickets or lift ticket and rentals, and then the inside windows are for snow sports school products.
Okay. And one of the changes that has been occasioned by moving the ticket window and the snow school sports and the shop over to the new lodges, there's a whole lot of new open locker space, isn't there?
There is. We turned the entire old rental shop area into seasonal locker space, and we do have some seasonal lockers available. And I was just downstairs and heard somebody thought that might make a great Christmas gift for someone. So, one of the things, if you're still looking for gift ideas, I always think, look to Eaglecrest because we've got some pretty cool stuff up here.
Absolutely. Well, having had a locker for, at least a decade now, I cannot imagine what it would be like getting all my stuff out and putting it in my car and schlepping it up there and schlepping it in and putting it on. Oh, no. Once you've enjoyed the life that is a locker, you will never go back. So you are not mistaken to recommend that. That would be a wonderful gift for the favorite skier in anyone's life.
Yes. And, the other thing is I just wanted to mention, Ben, is the skiing or snowboarding is the snow conditions are great on the entire mountain. And it's great if you haven't skied or snowboarded before and you're looking for something to do this holiday season. We've got some great packages up here. We've got some fabulous instructors. So make this your year to learn how to ski or snowboard. Or if years ago you did that as a kid and you decide you wanted to get back into it, Ben, now's the time because we're rocking it up here.
Excellent, excellent. So, of course, the mountain is open every day between now and when in January, except for Christmas Day, of course, but every day except Christmas until when?
until Monday, January 4th.
Wow, so that's a lot of skiing days.
Yep, that's a lot of skiing days. So we're closed Christmas Day, but other than that, we're open every day, and all the facilities are open. The snow bus is operating, and you can find that bus schedule at skiduna.com. And, it's full-on winter up here. It looks like, according to the forecast, we're going to get some more snow, and things are just get better and better every day.
Excellent. Well, then really quickly, because closed on Christmas Day, but open for some special fun on Christmas Eve, what's going on Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, we've got some ornament decorating for the kids. We have music in the great room. We're going to be doing some torchlight parades, a big person torchlight parade on Hooter, and then a kids torchlight parade, which is just great fun, Ben, on the porcupine chair. And then we have a visit from Santa. We've got a direct line into Santa, and Santa is coming on Christmas Eve, and we're all very excited. So we've got that schedule on skijuno.com, but it starts at about 3:30 in the afternoon and ends with a visit from Santa at 5:30.
And skijuno.com has, of course, been updated in the past couple of years, so it's a wholly different website than it was many years ago. It's possible to find out the schedule for these activities, the schedule for the snow bus, to buy a pass, to buy a locker. A lot of things can be done on that website now.
A lot of things can be done on that website, and I also urge people to follow us on their favorite social media. Because we use those as well to update on our events and conditions and what's going on around the mountain.
Excellent. Well, Jeff LeClow, thank you so much for all you do as a dedicated public servant working at Eagle Crest. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners this Juno afternoon?
I'd just say that it is winter on the mountain. We just like to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and come spend the holidays with us up at Eagle Crest.
Very good, Jeffrey. Well, you know I will see you up there soon, and I mean that. But until then, enjoy those runs, enjoy the powder, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Okay. Merry Christmas, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Program support is provided by the Sandpiper Cafe, family-owned and operated since 2006. Serving a full breakfast and lunch menu, including espresso, located on Willoughby before the downtown exit and open at 6 a.m. 7 days a week. Gift certificates available for the holidays.
This New Year's Eve, boogie down with KXLL for All That Glitters Is Soul, a disco sparkle party at the Alaskan. We'll be spinning a funky mix from 9 until close with a Soul Train dance contest at midnight. No cover and 21 and over. Peace, love, and sparkle.
And it's about 2 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Thank you so much for listening to a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 22nd of December. And stay tuned for more great programming on KRNN and KTOO. Tomorrow afternoon on a Juno Afternoon will be a spoken word special from NPR, Tinsel Tales. And, of course, there'll be great programming on all three stations here, public broadcasting in Alaska's capital city. So thanks again for listening. Best wishes for a very Merry Christmas later this week. Happy holidays, and be happy.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Many women, many children, many elderly, and a number who have not really survived the trip very well.
The number of migrants making the trip to Europe this year has crossed 1 million.
Today is Tuesday, December 22nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Robert Siegel. This hour we'll check in with one refugee, a Syrian man we met over the summer, who's now in Germany.
I can work, I have 3 years residency visa, and I can, like, start a new life now.
Later, the coarse language of Donald Trump.
Also, a touchdown that could have big implications for commercial space travel.
Well, SpaceX says it's like firing a pencil over the Empire State Building, then having it turn around, come back, and land vertically in the shoebox.
So no big deal.
Nah, no big deal.
And a British actor on playing a Brooklyn character in a New York theater.
Now news. From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. An Oregon woman who authorities say deliberately drove onto a crowded sidewalk in Las Vegas earlier this week, killing one woman and injuring nearly three dozen others, has been charged with murder. Steve Wilson is a district attorney in Clark County, Nevada.
This was a person who drove a 6,000-pound-plus motor vehicle for many, many yards, many, many feet into crowds of people and had a chance to stop and didn't. And kept driving and kept running people over.
Officials say 24-year-old Lakeisha Holloway, who had a toddler with her in the car at the time of the incident, is also being charged with leaving the scene of a collision and child abuse or neglect. Holloway has been ordered held without bond. She has a court appearance scheduled for tomorrow. Authorities are continuing their investigation into the incident, which occurred Sunday night. A grand jury in Texas has failed to indict anyone in connection with the arrest and death of Sandra Blonde earlier this year. From Houston Public Media,